Thanks very much for the invitation to speak, and it is wonderful to, in the kind of week where girls' education has been very much talked about because of the 7th billionth citizen of the world is about to be born, the focus has been that the educated girl in school is the one who's going to prevent great catastrophes around the population running out of control. So that girl in school has become a kind of image talked about the whole week and has come into greater focus with the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. So it's wonderful to be able to take these images and the policy that flows, that seems to flow very naturally from them. And what I'm going to do is give it quite a workout. And this is the stress test about the policy and the ideas. We've come a long way from 2000, when in the Education for All Girls and the MDGs, there was a major focus given to gender parity, and Chris has talked very interestingly about some of those achievements. We've had the numbers of girls out of school, girls and boys out of school, falling. There have been these major achievements in terms of putting gender on the policy map, and we've started to review critically what we've done. There's still a very long way to go in terms of achieving gender parity in primary and secondary, meeting the MDGs, however minimal that demand is, and addressing those large numbers of children out of school. What I want to do in this talk is do two things. Firstly, take forward and deepen some of the criticisms Chris was making about gender parity as a problem. And I agree with all the questions he was raising about where does gender parity stand in relation to gender equality. So I'll do first that, and then I want to raise some questions about the opportunities and the barriers that are presented to us in policy terms for our focus on gender and girls in school. Thinking about gender parity, I think there are five problems. There can be many more, but these are the ones I want to stress. The aggregation problem means that we're looking at countries and we're not looking at the diversity within countries. We don't look at regional problems. We don't look at different kinds of populations. And the problem around indigenous rights, the problems around the poor, the problems among very discriminated groups disappears into the aggregation problem. So a country can look as though it's doing well in gender parity, but really there are groups in that country who are not doing well at all. The second is this multidimensionality problem, so that education is just seen as being in school, and the way in which being or not being in school articulates with issues around health, issues around well-being, issues around economics, issues around political participation. That also seems to disappear. A country can seem to be doing well on gender parity, and the other questions pale into the background. The third is that the aspiration problem is masked. Just going to schools somehow captures every kind of aspiration. It stands for, it's like, you know, you say the kettle boils, but you mean it's the water in the kettle that's boiled. The girl in school, the aspirations of what that stands for, all of that is masked by, and we don't even inquire further. This is the reason why gender parity is an opening, but also a closure. The question is also around monitoring and evaluation. So we measure what is easy, the numbers of girls in school, and the last two speakers showed us different aspects of that. We might measure improve our measurement and say we'll measure who passes the test, but what we're not going to measure is the kinds of discussions, the kinds of processes that help people do well in school, that support learning, that support aspiration. And lastly, what's been associated with gender parity is this gaming problem. You'll focus on getting just a small number of people over the line because it gives you a good statistic. And the hardest to reach, the people who require multiple interventions, they're not on your agenda. It's too difficult to reach them. So that's one set of stresses I want us to think about. Okay, and now I want to draw on four projects I've been working with over the last 3 or 4 years to just present you with some data and question some of the opening and closures associated with thinking about young women, education, and gender relations. These were a mixture of research projects carried out with colleagues in South Africa and Kenya, or in all the countries listed on the slide, but also some very innovative attempts to link research with work on policy and practice done in partnership with ActionAid and with VSO and implementing partners in Tanzania, Nigeria, and Ghana. Okay. What's been a feature of all these projects, and I'm just giving you here the data from girls surveyed for the TENI project, Tackling Education Needs Inclusively in Northern Ghana, which is a project I worked on with VSO, is the very high aspiration of girls and boys, even the poorest, to go as far as they can in school. So these are 1,600 children interviewed in northern Ghana, and you can see that virtually all of them want to go to tertiary education. Now, we know what the conditions of schools are like in northern Ghana, and the slide gives me nightmares is that all these children are dreaming, have such high aspiration, and our capacity to support them to reach those aspirations is so low, and it induces great guilt. So I want to talk about four kinds of openings that this decade of concentrating and thinking in policy terms about gender and education has provided us with, but also to stress that these openings have had a tendency to become closures. And my conclusion with the time, you know, when you crack the whip, my conclusion, I'll just get it in now, is the need to push the door open wider. Don't be content with the openings we have. Push harder. So the four are that there's a sense that girls, we know what the answer is. Girls are both the problem and the answer. So there's this sense that there's an essentialized problem around girls. All girls are the same. All girls carry particular kinds of burdens. All girls are associated with particular kinds of solutions. And that's extremely problematic. The second opening, and I'll show you some data to expand on these points. The second opening, which is a closure I want to talk about, is associated with assumptions about particular kinds of communities that keep girls out of school. The third is about what EMIS can do, education management information systems, what it can do. It's been a huge achievement over the last 10 years to put these systems in place, but they need to now link up. They need to make more friends with other information systems. And the last opening I want to talk about is the focus on what works rather than necessarily what matters. So this is from some data from this project in Kenya and South Africa and selected global organizations that looked at how people talked about gender education and poverty reduction initiatives. And one of those findings from that study, when these are interviews with people in national ministries of education and global organizations, is that the way is that all girls are being talked about in the same way. So the first global policy analyst is talking about the way that get girls into schools because they'll marry better, or they'll fit in with the economy better. They won't, you're not thinking about girls as transformative in their own right. And the second bit of data is showing us is this notion that girls are in deficit. Girls somehow need to be pushed harder. There's something, girls lack what is normal, rather than seeing girls as creative in their own right. That's a South African Education Department official. And the third piece of data is another form in which this essentialized notion of the problem of the girl emerges. The girl is only being defined in terms of her sexuality, her reproductive rights. The problems of girls are associated with sex or exposure to gender-based violence. Now, I'm not doubting that any of those things are necessary. My problem is with this way of always seeing girls only these three facets of girls, deficit or sexuality or marriageability, and not seeing a wider dimension of girls' lives. So that's the first problem. I hope I'm okay on the time. Yeah, 5 minutes, yeah. The second problem is this notion of who is to blame. And I think it's very understandable in situations where the stakes are high. Countries are judged. Schools are judged all the time. The league table culture. Have you got your girls into school? How well have they passed in a test? Where do you stand on the graphs that UNESCO brings? Everybody feels we're working as hard as we can. Somebody else is to blame. And in these bits of data, this also comes from the interview, the Global Education and Poverty Reduction Research Study, where there are interviews with officials in the Kenya Provincial Education Department and a teacher in a school in a poor area, in a peri-urban area in Kenya. What we see is education professionals displacing the blame. Sorry, they are being performance managed and they're displacing the blame onto someone else. Instead of us saying, this is a national problem for all of us and we've each got a role to play and how can we support everyone? What you see here is the Kenyan Provincial Education Department talking about the poor. The poor don't educate their children. They must be to blame because they're poor, not looking at the economic and political relations that are having those kinds of effects that lead to poor children making these tragic kinds of decisions. And here's a teacher in a school, knowing that her school will be published in the newspaper, scoring lower on the Kenya primary school certificate, again, blaming the poor parents. And here's a provincial education official blaming particular kinds of communities and making all kinds of assumptions about the link between FGM and poverty and lack of education. Now, each leap of those is associated with blame instead of looking at the ways in which you can bring people together around developing solutions. So that's a second kind of opening that's become a closure.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay. This is the one about the education management information system and the stress on gender parity. And in the absolutely, I'll just throw this at you. What I want to show is looking at more complex measures of gender equality than just parity allow us to see more complex kinds of relationships. This comes from the ActionAid study I did in Tanzania with colleagues in Tanzania and Nigeria. And what it's showing, which I haven't got loads of time to explain to you, is that the gender profile, which is a composite indicator, not just of enrollment, but looking at enrollment and progression and achievement, doesn't necessarily link with how girls articulate what the problem, sorry, it does link with how girls articulate what the problem are. So that the in where schools have a below average gender profile, girls are less able to articulate their problems, here lack of facilities or pregnancy, than in schools with a higher gender profile. So that more complex measures allow us to see more complex and interesting relationships. And you're going to see that again here in my critique of this approach, the opening to get things done. We know what the answer is, girls' clubs, or bringing more women into management, or having more women in teachers. Actually, what you see from, this is the TENI project in Ghana, that those things at a local level are not lining up together. So when we looked at girls' aspirations, it doesn't necessarily line up with whether there are more or less women teachers, what the teachers' attitudes are, and that more complex ways of understanding what it is girls want and how we can measure it will lead, I think, to better policy. And this is the same looking at the gender profiles and women's presence on in management committees in Tanzania and in Nigeria. It's the gender profile seems to go up in Tanzania if there are more women on the management committee. It doesn't seem to go up in Nigeria, and that has a bearing on local political conditions. I am. So my conclusion is this: avoid the simple message. It's really important that we've got to the point of having more a big policy focus on girls in school, but it's really important that we constantly critique that policy message and look at local context and participation in that process of critique.
Thank you very much.